You're about to listen to episode number 149 of the Mile High Show, and I'll tell you right off the bat, it's a hot mess. It's a compilation of a few different recording sessions in and around Chino Valley, Arizona, this Labor Day weekend, which is territorial days here in Chino Valley. So if you are inclined to hearing me babble for a little bit, stick around. This episode is brought to you by the Big Pine Comedy Festival happening September 14, 15, and 16 in Flagstaff, Arizona. I will be there taking photographs and doing some podcasts. But check them out, bigpinecomedyfestival.com. Tickets, individual show tickets and festival passes are available there. But show up, Flagstaff, Arizona, 14, 15, and 16 of September. And that is who's bringing you this mess of a podcast. Wanted to hear from you a little bit about the district, your role in it, and the last 100 years to the best of your recollection. Now, obviously, you haven't been here that long, but tell us about the district.
Well, you know, this is our 100th anniversary of the district, 1918. July 1st, 1918. So we're in our 100th year, and you know, I've been here. This is my 21st, so I've been here about 20% of that, and you know, even in the last 20 years, it's changed quite a bit. But you know, it was the days when the address of the school was across the street from the log cabin,
for those of you that don't know, the log cabin is a bar. Not too many cities in the nation can you find a full-fledged cowboy bar about 30 yards from the school?
Yeah, in the day it was the grocery store, gas station,
and the log cabin was,
and that was, you know, that was the only business in town practically for people to go to and get all their staples. But you know, we've had 26 years. We're going to a 26th graduating class at Chino Valley High School. So. You know, it was a K-9 for many years. It was a kindergarten through eighth grade for many years prior to that. You know, it's really exciting. I think that Chino Valley in general, the whole area, Chino Valley and Paulden, are set to explode population-wise. And I'm really excited that the district is going to, you know, be part of that and grow with the town. And, you know, we've had, you know, tonight's a perfect example of the town and the district working together to do stuff for the community. And that's great.
How many students, I mean, I'm juggling microphones here. How many students at Chino High School?
Chino Valley High School has about 760 students.
And the district-wide, you've got Chino Valley High, Del Rio Elementary, Territorial, which is, what's the official title for
Territorial? It's a Territorial Early Childhood Center, which is it's a pre-K through 2.
Pre-K through 2nd grade.
Del Rio is elementary is 3 through 5. Heritage Middle School is 6th grade through 8th grade. And then, of course, the high school is 9 through 12.
How many students district-wide?
We have about 2,400 students district-wide.
Now, I'm not outing you, but you are a Prescott resident. Is that correct?
I am a Prescott resident.
Now, your time in here, a couple of decades, you said?
Yeah.
In the area and in the district, and we've talked before for other projects and that, but a little history about, I got chip on my mouth, I was enjoying the barbecue as well. A little history of why you chose to make this home. I'm kind of talking to people tonight about small town. This is all new to me. I came from a very small town in Northern California of 150,000 people.
Right.
To move from there to Paulden, actually, and now in Chino. It's still new to me. You know, I've been out here a dozen or so years, but why did you choose to make this area home? What drew you to this type of atmosphere?
Well, I actually moved to Prescott before I started working at for Chino Valley High School as the chemistry teacher 21 years ago. My wife, her dad actually was born in Prescott and raised in Prescott. Her grandmother, my wife's grandmother, was a teacher at Prescott High School when it was at what's now Mile High Middle School. My father-in-law went to Washington School, Lincoln School, Miller Valley School, Prescott High School, the junior high, which was located where the jail is now in Prescott. And, you know,
I wonder how many of those former students have made that trek back to their old campus.
So, you know, we have, my wife's family has a long history in Prescott, and we had an opportunity to move here from Southern California. My wife was pregnant. We were having our only child, and didn't want to raise her in Southern California. And I, you know, I grew up in Southern California, San Diego, and it just, we had an opportunity to move here, wanted a small town, and, you know, it was the best move that we could have made.
I also, like I said, from California, and, you know, obviously you make the best of where you are, and you do your job at home and things. I'm learning that now that I've got an eight-year-old. But when I think about it, I obviously would do whatever it took to take care of him and the family.
Right.
But I can't imagine raising my child back in the Bay Area or in Southern California.
Yeah.
Just this has become home mainly because of how we want to raise him. And, you know, it's
right.
Just, you know, it's so different than when we go back and visit the Bay Area. I can't imagine trying to raise him there.
And, you know, even for, you know, my wife is an educator, and so you both are. And, you know, being an educator, I think, is the most family-friendly profession you can be. For the first 9 grades through middle school, my daughter and my wife were at the same school. And, you know, on the same schedule, summer, you know, breaks off. We had opportunities to do family things.
See, that happens where I was from, too, where parents and children at the same school, but a lot of times they were just students together. It was a whole different reason. What I want to talk about your daughter,
right?
Because she's going through a bit of a milestone right now.
Right? Can we just take it? Can I put a few burgers on and then we'll?
Oh, please, please. Start. I want to know a little bit about what generated, and obviously I should probably be talking to her, but what caused her to throw her hat in the ring?
You know, so, you know, my daughter is 19. She came home in late February, early March, and said, "I'm running for city council in Prescott. Mom, will you be my campaign manager? Dad, will you be my campaign treasurer?" And, you know, we talked to her a little bit. And really, you know, it's her concerns are not just Prescott concerns. I think they're really regional concerns. She graduated high school. And, you know, went off to ASU, and talking to her friends are going off to U of A, ASU, NAU, other places, and they're not making plans to come back to the area.
Yeah.
And, you know, her concern is that there's not a whole lot keeping young people in the Tri-City or Quad City area right now. And she wants to work on that. She wants that to be her focus. When, you know, and nothing against those that are on the board, on the town council or city council, but that may not be their priority because,
yeah,
you know, they're all middle-aged or older.
Yeah, I think you're being kind and generous there. And one of the things that this area in general, and it goes from Chino down to Mayer, and, of course, into Prescott Valley, fair or not, is the good old boy network.
Uh-huh.
It's the generations of different families who have been
right
in the leadership roles. And this is probably the worst thing to do, and I hope she doesn't do this, and I hope you don't. But when you start going through social media and reading comments and things, there was a few comments today on her hard and strong showing. What'd you say? She came in second in the vote getting?
Second in the primary, yeah.
And this one person had made a post. Well, what is this saying? This 19-year-old kid, yeah, came and got. What's going on with our leaders? And by and large, the vast majority of the comments were good.
Yes.
That's an eye-opener. That's what this area needs because, and again, this person's comment was based on why is change? Why are we changing? Well, the area is changing.
Right.
And the leadership needs to change with it. So
yeah.
It was refreshing to read some of those comments going through. It's like, that's what we need.
Yeah.
Congratulations to her. Let's hope some change comes about.
Well, and you know, what's interesting is, you know, for those that have seen her signs around town, they're purple, the big circle that says Alexa for, yeah, Prescott. And purple is significant. And the reason is, one of the things that she really wanted is to engage, you know, it's nonpartisan, so I don't want to say Republicans, yeah, and Democrats, but conservatives and liberals. And she wants to, you know, she's been accused of playing both sides. And I like what one person said was, you know, God forbid she tried to, you know, she tried to work together and build a consensus amongst everybody. And that's really, you know, she's gone to conservative events. She's gone to liberal events.
So the purple being the blend of the red and the blue.
The red and the blue, gotcha, for the Democrat, okay, and Republicans. And
I'm a political numbskull, so these things come slow to me.
And so, you know, she's been accused of playing both sides, and I think that's what she wanted.
Yeah.
And it's not playing, it's engaging and listening to and getting to know the what they want, what both sides want, and what their concerns are, and what their desires are, and what they want to see in Prescott. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Now, what this will be out in a day or so. We're going to post this up.
Right.
So what it was is last Tuesday was the primary.
Correct.
And depending on the percentages and the vote counts, some things, a couple of the propositions were successful. They won't,
correct,
have to go to the thing. But as far as the Prescott Town, Prescott City Council,
uh-huh,
it will go to the general election in November. Everybody will.
Yeah, what happened, correct, was that you need half plus one,
gotcha,
of the ballots cast. The top two vote getters were probably in the 40% of the ballots cast.
Nice.
And it's not votes, because there's not everyone voted for three people on a ballot. And you know, you could have single-shotted or double-shot because there was only one or two people that you wanted to vote for. So it was half of the ballots cast. There were 17,000-plus ballots cast. You need about 8,600 votes. She had just over 7,000.
But what this shows is that she made a very strong run. So come first Tuesday in November, it looks like.
Well,
is that what it is?
Yeah, it is. It's, I think it's November 2nd. And ballots would come out in about a month because it's an all-male election.
So how'd you feel Tuesday night when these were, or I guess Wednesday morning as they were getting tallied?
Well,
out?
You know, I think there was six candidates that really wanted it to be done on Tuesday.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone's going on. But other than winning outright, I think it's the best possible outcome that she really could have hoped for.
Were you guys all together Tuesday?
We were hanging out with the Alexa from the beginning has been a advocate for Prop 443. So the 443 group invited her and actually all the pro 443 people to join them. And so we were at the palace with that group, and it was exciting because 443 passed. 442, which was home rule that no one really understands, it passed, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I unfortunately had to get educated on that because it's something that Chino reviews.
We do it here, so yeah. So that passed, fortunately, and then she was successful, and so that was good to be in that group. But we're taking a break this weekend,
yeah,
the long weekend. Getting back into fundraising mode, getting back into campaign mode, and 2 months, 8 weeks from Tuesday, and we'll find out.
Well, it'll be exciting to see when she takes her seat there in November, after the election.
It's at end of November is, yeah, when they get seated.
It'll be interesting to see how the reactions are, because, like you said, there are a lot of the old guard, the families, the generations, even the businesses that aren't necessarily embracing change or aren't necessarily embracing that cooperation,
uh-huh,
that's needed for success in a lot of areas. So,
but I think you'd be surprised about some of the people that have embraced her,
yeah,
and taken her under her wing. And it I think it really is some of that old guard. That really
they're ready to pass the baton a little bit.
Well, I think they see the value in having a different perspective.
Very good.
That younger perspective and really. You know, and again, from both sides of the political aisle that have done that. So that's kind of exciting as well.
It'll be,
yeah,
nice to see. It'll be interesting to,
yeah,
follow.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, John. Appreciate,
yep,
it.
You're welcome.
I'm Cindy Daniels, and we are out here tonight at Chino Valley's first home football game against Sedona to kick off and celebrate the 100th year of the Chino Valley Unified School District. And tonight you can come and have a hamburger for $2 and enjoy the game for $9 if you're an adult and $7 if you're a student.
Give me a little bit about your history in the area, and what was hometown for you?
Well, I'm Canadian, but I'm actually a U.S. citizen now. I grew up in a town that was a little bit bigger than this, and we thought it was small. I've been in this area for 22 years. I've been in Chino for 12, so I kind of like being in the small town and the small town atmosphere.
So 22 years
in the area.
Yep. So you moved here when you were 3?
Pretty much, when I was three. I'd been in Tucson for 13 years before that, and we lived all around Arizona, and I lived in Michigan for 14 years.
Tell us a little bit about that small town living and what we're seeing here today. This is basically an entire community barbecue. Looks like the crowd's grouping up outside for the football game as well. Talk a little bit about what it's like in a small town, why you chose to stay here. You have your kids in this district as well.
Well, I have one kid in the district now and one at Yavapai College. He's here helping out tonight. But I think our crowd here tonight is pretty indicative of this town. Dr. Ron Minnick, who was superintendent for 16 years, is sitting over there. And we have retired teachers here tonight who travel and have reappeared for this 100th anniversary kickoff. We have families here tonight who have lots of foster kids that they've taken in. And I think all of those things kind of speak well to the family environment. And Chino Valley is a place people want to be, and they want to be with their kids.
Great, thanks. We'll see you down on the field. I am taking it easy tonight. I shot the first quarter and a half of a Chino Valley High School football game. The Chino Valley Cougars playing host to the Sedona Scorpions out of Sedona, Arizona. Beautiful night out here. Beautiful weather, not too windy. And I was out here covering for local media for the first quarter or so. Just got to bang out a couple of pictures. And I decided to record here just to sit back and relax and pretend I'm working for the rest of the night. It has been an extremely hectic week for me on the home front and on the job front. And I just wanted to sit and relax in a small town and enjoy a community football game. A good chunk of the town comes out to watch these games. A nice group of folks line the parking lot because they don't want to pay the $2 or $3 to get in. I think also so they can bring beer out to the parking lot. I'm not sure. But this is a I address it somewhere in here because I recorded a couple segments pregame. But it's the centennial, 100 years of education is what they're calling it. The school district here in Chino Valley, Arizona, has been around for 100 years. And the town itself only incorporated in the 70s, you know, 40-some years ago. But the district goes back to 1918. So this is the 100th year of, nice, interception by Chino, they could use it. Anyway, it's 100 years of education for Chino Valley. So I sat and talked a little bit with the school superintendent, John Scholl, and they're doing a community barbecue before the game, so myself, my wife, and my son went out, grabbed a burger, and hung out for a little bit, and now I am watching quarter two. It's just an update. It's 12-12. It's tied at 12. 3 minutes and 57 seconds left in the half. I'm not sure if you could hear those or not. What you're listening to are cicada bugs up in the trees really close to where I'm sitting in one of our major roads, Road 1 West in Chino Valley, Arizona. In any other part of the country, this would be considered a very small side road. But in our little town of, 11,000 people or so, 10-5, this is one of our major arteries. The other artery being the state highway, which is our main street. I'm recording out for, by the way, this is the Mile High Show, episode 149, if you hadn't determined that already. Well, you clicked on it, so I guess you did. I am recording at our Territorial Days parade and our Territorial Days celebration for the town of Chino Valley. Chino Valley was incorporated in, I believe, 1971, early 70s anyway, but it has been in existence for quite some time before that. In the mid and late 1800s, the first settlers officially set up here, but obviously people were living here before. Some of these ranchers and, of course, the indigenous people had lived here for centuries before that, but it was the first military outpost and territorial capital of Arizona, depending on who you ask.
If you ask the folks that live in Prescott, about 10 miles up the highway, they claim to be the first territorial capital. So depending on who you ask, that's the answer you get. I live in Chino Valley, so I'm sticking with the Chino Valley story. That the settlers came, set up a post, and manned it for a few years, and then moved on up the highway, or at that time up the dirt road, I guess, to Prescott to set up the other territorial capital. So every year around this time, around the Labor Day weekend, the town of Chino Valley puts on a big territorial celebration, territorial days, with a parade and a big community pancake breakfast that has been sponsored by the local Lions Club for decades. The school FFA, Local Future Farmers of America program, puts on a huge corn dinner where people come actually from all over the state of Arizona to visit. They get thousands of people coming through. This is actually the 67th annual corn dinner that will be happening this evening. And I wanted to kind of do an episode to talk about what this town is like, what the atmosphere is like in this area, because it's a bit of a throwback. This is, for me, small town America. This is the type of feeling that I had growing up in the 70s in the San Francisco Bay Area, when Hayward, where I grew up, was still a fairly sleepy small town. And now, some 40-some years later, it is the same here where I live and where I'm raising my own son. It's a bit of a throwback. And one of the reasons why I'm doing that this week is I myself have been kind of thrown back. At least I figured it out at least about 30 years or so. And I'll tell you why. A couple days ago, my phone broke. My cell phone that I rely on each and every day, all day, just took a dump on me. And I contacted my provider, and it'll be a few days before they send it back. And then the holiday weekend's throwing it in a little bit of a whirlwind. So I'm going to be about 6 days without a phone. One of the reasons why, if I was with one of the major carriers, I probably could have walked into a store and swapped one out in a matter of an hour or so. But I started using a cell phone way back when, probably before a lot of you did, through the job I had required it. But I got my first cell phone in 1988. They started becoming way more and more popular in the 90s, of course, and probably most of you listening have had one since the mid or late 90s, but I've had mine since 1988, and I figured that out because while I was struggling to keep in contact with customers and things, since my phone went dead, I just got to thinking, and how reliant I've gotten on my cell phone over the decades, and it kind of got me thinking about life before cell phones, and in many ways, it's a lot better. Now, I started with Nextel way back when, and I can't remember who my first one was with. I had purchased a phone in 88. It was, you had two options at that point: get one installed in your vehicle on the dashboard, or buy a mobile unit, which was a big pouch that's about the size of a shoebox that you would carry around strapped on your shoulder. And that was my cell phone. It was in a shoebox size pouch that I would wear, or usually I would just leave it strapped to the, I would wrap it around the gear shift of my brand new 1988 Toyota pickup, 4Runner, that I still own, by the way. Still own that 88 4Runner. I would wrap the shoulder band around the gear shift, and it would mount right there to the transmission hump of my truck. Very rarely did I carry it with me, but I got it anyway, in 88, and I have been cell phone tethered since. And it got me thinking when it went dead the other day that how reliant I've become on that phone. And by unplugging for several days, how that would affect my day-to-day activity. It seems like a very minor issue, but put yours away. Put yours away for 5-6 days. and it you'll notice quite a bit of a change. Now, like I had said, I'm going to throw in a little commercial here for Google Fi, the Google Fi project. I don't know if it's Google Fi or Google Fee. It's whatever it is. It's Google Fi. Now, I forget who I was with, probably only one carrier back in the 80s, and then in the mid-90s, I switched over to Nextel, and then they were absorbed by Sprint, and I was with Nextel / Sprint from the 90s up to about 2 years ago, and that was because Google Fi made their service available to the masses. And I started doing that because it saved me quite a bit of money. Now, the service is great. I think they piggyback on Sprint, as a matter of fact, at least in this area. But the fees are extremely low, so I made the switch. That's the plus side. The negative side, of course, is that Google doesn't have a store anywhere. I think they partner through, like, Best Buys and stuff. But up where I am, there's no real store. So everything's done through the internet and through the mail. So on Thursday, it's Saturday today, on Thursday when it went dead, I got on a chat line through my laptop, and we tried several reboots and restarts and reformatting, and it took a few calls, and then it was determined that, nope, the phone's just dead. They will send me out a new one through FedEx, and unfortunately with the holiday weekend, it won't arrive until Tuesday the 5th. So that means from Thursday to Tuesday, I will be phoneless, and I actually really like it. What it has done is thrown me back in time a little bit to 1988 when I first got my first cell phone. So what was it like before I had my first cell phone? It was a lot like living in Chino Valley. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm looking out. I'm at this Territorial Days parade. Looking out, they're about to start in about 10 minutes or so, and I'm looking up and down the parade route, and I see lots of people taking pictures with their cells. I see people talking on their cells. So yeah, there's cell service up here, but in many ways, Chino Valley, Arizona is like the Bay Area was in many places was, 30, 40 years ago, in the sense that it's a small town. You can't walk down the street or go pump up your car at the gas station or go buy groceries without bumping into 15 people that you know. And it got me thinking, what was it like in 88? So I printed out some things of what was going on in 1988 that I'll be talking about little by little here. And I see, hey, fellow journalist over here. Hey, Torrance, come here. Come here, buddy. I'm doing one of my podcasts, and this is and I know what the answer is going to be before I even ask it. But I was telling you last night my phone broke, and I got to thinking of when was the last time I was without a cell phone? I got my first cell phone, and I've had one constant since 1988. So I'm kind of doing a little retro of what was going on in 88 and how that compares to today. So I'm going to ask you, and I already know the answer. Okay. What were you doing in 88?
I was not born yet.
I hate you already. Torrance Dunham. Hey, plug away. Where folks can watch your videos. They could look at your photos, obviously at PrescottyNews.com, but you have other outlets. Where can folks find the great Torrance Dunham?
Yeah, we're all over the place. We got Prescotty News, of course, and then Prescott Valley.
Not Lynn. We plug Lynn enough. Don't you got your own stuff?
Yeah. I put a lot of stuff on my website, which is torrencedunham.com. That's TorrenceDunham.com. So I put a lot of stuff on there, and some of my stuff from college, and then, of course, the stuff that I'm doing for E-News as well.
You went to college?
I did.
I went.
I got a degree, too.
I went through college a couple of times. I didn't get much on me, though.
It didn't stick.
Didn't stick?
All right, how... I met your parents one day. Where do they live?
They live in Prescott.
Okay, so you're up here. Where'd you go to school, though?
I went to school down in Phoenix at Arizona State, okay. The Cronkite School.
Cronkite School of Journalism.
Yep.
Nice. Now, okay, so when were your parents married?
They were married, quite honestly, I'm not sure, though. I'm actually not sure, though.
All right, let's out them. I'm going to see. I think I'm probably, no, not probably, I'm sure I'm... At least, if not older than your dad. How old's your dad?
He is in... Is it sad that I don't know the exact age of my parents? That's really bad, isn't it?
Cut them in half, count as rings. That's the best way to... Oh, that's trees. Never mind.
That's trees.
You don't know how old your mom or dad are?
I know my dad is in his late 60s because he gets the senior discount at many restaurants. And then my mom is in her early 60s, so she gets discounts as well at certain restaurants.
Let me educate you. Mm-hmm. You start getting your discounts in your mid-50s.
All right. There you go. You know what? I think my mom is actually in her late 50s. I'm not sure. I'm terrible. That's good, though, right?
No, you're a horrible son. Get away from me.
You should know your parents' ages.
Yeah, my mom's 80.
Does she like you telling her that, though?
Yeah, she doesn't know much of anything now. Yeah. That's one of the things we do with my son. He's 7 now. Mm-hmm. She has dementia, so when she comes to visit, he plays with her. Then we take him in the room, change his clothes, bring him out, and we told her we have twins.
Oh, that's mean.
Good. Thanks, Torrance.
All right, thanks all that.
Goober, I don't like you anyway. You're not old enough. No. So what was going on in the 80s back when I got my first phone? Again, we're at Territorial Days out in Chino Valley. And again, why I'm doing this is because this area is being small town America, it's a lot like... probably many of you Metro folks will remember it being like in the 80s, which is the only tie-in for me putting an episode out this week. Ha! Is he an excuse? One of the things they're doing as well is the town here was incorporated in the early 70s. But like I said, it's been a settlement for many, many generations before that. The school district is actually 100 years old this year, so... Part of what I'm going to drop in here later is my little chat last night with a school superintendent, John Scholl. He talks a little bit about the district, as well as, again, small town living, because his daughter is now being, Alexa, is being immersed in local politics. She's a 19-year-old young lady who has just recently went through the primary election for a town council seat in Prescott, which is the big city in this area, the big city being 30-some thousand. No, maybe it's 60,000. I don't know. But it's not that big. It's like a neighborhood in my old hometown. But she has been successful through the primary and will go to the general election in a couple of months here. But we talked to John a little bit. Excuse me. Talked to John a little bit about why he has moved his family here from Southern Cal, the L.A. area, and why they are so active in the community being small-town America. So we'll drop that in a little bit. But the school district that he leads is celebrating its centennial this year. So the theme of the parade today is 100 years of education, 100 years of the Chino Valley Unified School District. And to kick that celebration off, they had an entire community barbecue last night before the football game where Sedona Scorpions from Sedona area, a big touristy area in Sedona, not too far from us, came down and played at Chino Valley Stadium, and the Cougars were triumphant. I forget the score. I left at halftime, but it was a one-point game, I believe, that went up right up to the wire. So they kicked off the centennial of the district by having a community barbecue, and then everybody stuck around for the big football game, Friday Night Lights edition. So it's a lot of fun. It's different than how I grew up. And then tonight, after the parade and carnival they got out here, I'll put up some pictures of all this stuff on MileHighShow.com. But the... they have some rides out here, some inflatable water slides, and different vendors, community organizations who have giveaways and food trucks and things. So it's a real community event, which you don't necessarily see in a metro area. It's all foreign to me. I've lived here a dozen or so years, but it's still all new to me. I still have the big town mentality, I guess. And the other thing, this evening after all of this, the local FFA, Future Farmers of America organization, will be having their 67th annual corn dinner, FFA corn dinner, where thousands and thousands of people show up from all over the state. They come up from Phoenix area, Tucson area, and of course the Prescott, what is termed the quad or even the five Cinco City area, which is, of course, Prescott, Prescott Valley, Chino Valley, Dewey Humboldt, Paulden, Skull Valley, Kirkland. It's this whole area in Yavapai County. Great place to live, great place to visit. The parade's about to start up, I believe. So I'm going to be cutting loose here in a minute, and I'll come back. Like I said, I'll drop in what I talked about with John last night, John Scholl, and I'll probably wander around the carnival area and interview some folks as well. But what I'm going to be talking about is some of the things that were happening in America in 1988. One of the things, of course, that I remember, being a boy from the San Francisco Bay Area, that was the year that the Oakland A's played against the L.A. Dodgers and lost in the World Series. Now, they came back the next year in 89 for the Bay Bridge Series. But, yeah, they lost against the Dodgers. And I'm pulling up my printout. I don't think I brought it. Yeah, I don't think I brought it. But if you remember Eckersley on the mound, I believe it was game one, Kurt Gibson smacking that home run and limping around the bases. Now, after the A's dominated the entire 88 season, and then I think, didn't they sweep the Reds? Sweep the Red Sox in the playoffs, and then they come up against the Dodgers in game one after dominating all year. The wind was just pushed right out of our sails with Gibson's home run and him limping around the bases. And I was looking over the rosters last night. Shooty Babbitt, Walt Weiss, Jose Canseco, Mark McGuire, the Batch Brothers, Carney Lansford, I believe, was on that squad as well. That was a glory time for the A's. And I remember going to ball games with my brother and hanging out in the bleachers. It was a lot of fun. Here we go. Yeah, I got it. Let's see. It was the 85th World Series in history in 1988. Yeah, Gibson's home run was the iconic World Series moment. Oral Hershiser, the MVP for the series. They took the series 4-1, and I tell you, it was a rough year for A's fans. But we came back with the Bay Bridge World Series, of course, in 89. Also, the Loma Prieta earthquake. I think we've talked about that on an episode or two, but. Yeah, the Dodgers just took the wind right out of our sails. What was hot? What was hot in the movies? That was 88. The original Die Hard movie came out. I remember seeing that in the theaters. We saw it most likely at the festival. Luong Dang was the manager over there, so we didn't pay for a movie for most of the 80s, me and all my buddies. Reginald Vell Johnson, he made a career in that, starting in that movie. Well, yeah, I'm sure he was acting before, but that's where most of us got to know him. He had a career playing that same character, a chubby African-American cop, donut-eating cop, Reginald Vell Johnson. That's what he made his career as. Bruce Willis, of course, Alan Rickman. Die Hard came out in 88. Oh, you know what you were doing if you went to the movies and paid for movies? You were probably paying $3.50 a ticket. That's what it costs to get into a movie. Like I said, I didn't know that, though. I didn't buy a movie ticket for most of that decade. How about a postage stamp? 24 cents. So the year I got my first cell phone, 24 cents to mail a letter. I don't even know what it is now. Dozen eggs, 65 cents. A dot matrix printer, which was cutting edge at the time. Now you can get a very nice inkjet printer if you even print anything. Most people don't. Everything's electronic. But you can get it for about $20, $25 at Costco. A dot matrix printer, $189 was the average price. How about a Logitech mouse that you typically will get for free nowadays? A Logitech mouse, $89. Let's come back with, I'm going to cut here. Parade's about to start. I got to take some pictures, and we'll be talking more about what was going on in 88 after I plug back in. Well, the parade is over. I wandered around a little bit with Torrance Dunham, who you heard from a few minutes ago. And we wandered around, talked media, and set up a time. We're going to be sitting down with Torrance for a full podcast and help him launch his own shortly. So maybe next week or so, we'll see. But it was a fun parade in the hot sun. Lots of horses, lots of antique cars, lots of fun stuff happening in my little small town of Chino Valley, Arizona. What we were talking about before I clicked stop was what some of the prices were. The cost of living in 88. Some of the stuff I don't know. Dow Jones average was 2168. I don't know what that means because I'm an idiot. What else? I did some printouts on my non-dot matrix printer. Interest rates at the year end were 10.5%. I believe now they're like 3 or 4, I think, maybe less. I don't know. For me, they're a lot more because my credit's horrible. Yearly inflation rate in the U.S., 4.08%. I have no idea what that means. This I do know. Average cost of a new home, $91,600. Now, in for those of you out of the area, say the Bay Area or even Phoenix or Southern Cal, average price of a home is probably in the Bay Area, $400,000, maybe $600,000, depending on where you're living at. In my old neighborhood, probably about $500,000. My parents bought it in 58, 59. It was about 5 years old, I believe, at the time. 1958, 59, I think, if I remember correctly, they paid $8,000 for it. I don't remember. It's either $8,000 was what they went for new, and then when they bought them, they were like $13,000, $14,000. I'm not sure. I don't remember. At one point, I did know that figure. But now that same exact house, my brother lives there now in the exact same house we grew up in. I want to say it's probably $500,000, if not more. Southern Cal, I think they're hovering around $1 million. In my neck of the woods, you could get a manufactured home, not a trailer, not a mobile home, but one of the manufactured homes. They bolt down to a stem wall. They truck them out. They're very nice. From the outside, you really can't tell that it was pre-assembled. You can get those for about $100,000. You could probably get them with less land for $90,000 or less. Most of the home lots up here are, an acre is considered small. We're on an acre. We have a 1 acre plot with a site-built home that hovers under $200,000. It's like $180,000, $190,000, something like that. It is a 2,600-square-foot home on 1 acre, site-built home, concrete slab. This home would not be able to be sold in the Bay Area because you can't find an acre of property there anywhere. But other homes in this area, $150,000, $160,000, are fairly decent newer homes. Of course, we have an area called American Ranch and out Williamson Valley Road where the multi-million dollar homes are, but those are huge. Those are mansions in other parts of the country. So this $91,000 back in 88 is a national average and significantly more now. Average monthly rent around the country, $420. If I remember correctly, in 1988, I was living in Hayward, and I was renting a house. The house was renting, I want to say, for $600. I lived there with a couple of roommates. That's a whole nother podcast. Me and Gary Putman, James Terry, and several visits by the police. Speaking of which, you know what else happened in 1988? The introduction of crack cocaine to the country. Speaking of that house off of Tennyson Road. Yeah, a new drug, crack cocaine, appears, a derivative of powder cocaine, and is increasingly found in U.S. cities. That happened in 1988. That's, again, a whole other podcast. How about a gallon of gas? A gallon of gas in 1988, the average was 91 cents. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I want to say it was just over a dollar, maybe a dollar one, dollar two, dollar five at the premium stations. I want to say it was in 88. My another thing that happened in 1988 was the death of my father. Ernie Santos died in April of 1988. And he had said that he had long boasted in the 70s when gas was like, I think when I started driving in like 80, 81, 79, 80, 81, whenever that was, I think gas was like 50 cents a gallon. I think. Now, I remember as a kid, gas prices going up to like 35. I remember 35 cents being a biggie. It was, I think it skyrocketed to like 60 cents during the late 70s, that oil crisis when Carter was president. And I remember my dad saying, if it ever reaches a dollar a gallon, I'm not driving anymore. And we lived fairly close to his work, longtime Caterpillar tractor employee, and he began walking to work. He, of course, kept driving other places, but he had made that statement. So I want to say before he passed in 88 in the San Francisco Bay Area, it went to over a dollar. But the average in 88 was 91 cents around the country. Now, to give you an idea, now here in Arizona, we're hovering right around, I want to say, $2 a gallon. It might be 213. It fluctuates. I don't really look at it that close because I use the I'll tell you. It's $2.25 because I use my trusty Fry's Kroger shopping loyalty card, and I gassed up the other day, and I had 20 cents off, and it dropped it to $2.05 a gallon. So it is $2.25 as of earlier this week, and I put in that truck I drive. I want to say it was 40-some bucks to fill up, and I was maybe a quarter tank already, so yeah. It was over $4 a gallon in Arizona in 2007 because at that time we had a brand new Silverado pickup truck, and it was a huge tank in that sucker. And that in 2007 was when prices again skyrocketed across the country, and we were over $4 a gallon in Arizona. And the gas in the Bay Area in California, I believe, was well over $5.50 a gallon. Right now, I think they're at about $3 a gallon. So we're about 75 cents cheaper than California. I think. I'm probably wrong. I most likely am wrong. Anyway, so gas in 88, 91 cents a gallon. I said before, movie tickets, $3.50. Dozen eggs, 65 cents. Gallon of milk, $1.89. You know what? I'm paying about that now. Milk prices have stayed pretty, or at least have come down. Pork chops, 40 cents a pound. Have no idea what a pork chop costs now. A Ford Taurus, which was kind of a middle of the road average family car, family sedan, $9,996. The Volkswagen Rabbit, my good friend at the time, Todd Sanchez, his family, and then he inherited a brown Volkswagen Rabbit Cabriolet. And those were cool cars. I liked the Rabbits. $7,100. That's what they were. So that's some of the stuff that was happening in 1988. I have left the parade. I have left the park. I am on my porch getting ready to upload this episode for the Podcast Radio Network. PodcastRadio.net is, I believe, their website. I should look that up, huh? I don't. Again, the whole reason we're here is because I don't have a phone. So I have an old phone that I use, and I use it as a tablet. It's not hooked up. It's a big Samsung Galaxy 4 that I use, or Galaxy 3. I don't know. It's a big, huge phone. That was my phone from before, and I'm using it now as a tablet. I'm checking email and stuff, checking my voicemail because my phone is dead. So let me see what podcast... I should know this. PodcastRadioNetwork.net is where you can find the Mile High Show every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Arizona Time. And again, all our archives are available at MileHighShow.com. But check out Podcast Radio Network, PodcastRadioNetwork.net.
John over there runs an independent radio network. It also broadcasts on the FM band. He also has an app, a player, that you can download at podcastradionetwork.net. I'm saying that so much, I should check it, huh? There it is. That's his logo. The Podcast Radio Network, podcastradionetwork.net. He has a full list of shows. He's been so kind to include the Mile High Show on that. But he has some comedy shows, some political shows, some music and wrestling shows, all kinds of stuff. It is a hub of independent, smaller podcasts. He's looking to get some bigger names and some sponsorship and some dollars behind him. But right now, it's a great opportunity to find, discover, listen, and download independent podcasters like myself, like the Mile High Show. So check them out, podcastradionetwork.net, where the Mile High Show is every Sunday evening. And, of course, all day, every day at milehighshow.com, also iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play Music, all those spots where you find podcasts. So check it out. Thanks for listening. Again, I should be back mobile and contactable. That's a new word I just made up in a few days. But I am enjoying time travel back to 1988 before I had a cell phone. Thanks for listening again. The show brought to you by Big Pine Comedy Festival, bigpinecomedyfestival.com, September 14, 15, and 16 in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble. When you worry, you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Got no place to lay your head. Somebody came and took your bed. Don't worry, be happy. The landlord say your rent is late. He may have to litigate. Don't worry, be happy.
Look at me, I'm happy. Don't worry, be happy. I give you my phone number. When you worry, call me. I make you happy.
Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no cash, ain't got no style, ain't got no gal to make you smile. But don't worry, be happy. 'Cause when you worry, your face will frown, and that will bring everybody down. So don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, don't worry. Don't do it. Be happy. Put a smile on your face. Don't bring everybody down like this.
don't worry. It will soon pass, whatever it is. Don't worry, be happy.